Entrepreneur, her. Open for business for women in business.
I'm Mo, and you are listening to Entrepreneur Her. We're talking toxic masculinity. We've had a doctor, and we have another doctor now, but one with a PhD, which is really cool. My third PhD. I like talking to people. I only just learnt today, even I had to Google what PhD was, Dr. Humphreys. But I am very excited to talk to you because I feel like having this conversation with a man. I'm a mother of a son who's only 20 months, but I can already see the pressure put on him to be a certain way and to act a certain way from society, not from me, from people around him, which I think forms part of why there's so much pressure on men and why mental health with men is so bad right now globally. Introduce you, Doctor. You quiet man, Dr. Ashley Humphrey.
I know. So lovely to be talking with you.
First, let's talk about your PhD.
Sure.
What is it?
My PhD focused on Western cultural influences on youth mental health. It was a topic that I guess I became more and more interested in throughout my 20s when a lot of friends, male friends mainly, disclosed to me that they were struggling with mental health issues. And I was kind of really interested in this paradox between this great country we live in Australia, where we have so many freedoms and so many, I guess, advantages to living a flourishing life as opposed to people in generations gone by. And yet, again, there's this mental health epidemic that you touched on. So I was essentially looking at the potential contribution of Western cultural values and how they've sort of changed over the last 30 years. So things like how we socialize, how we kind of tend to be much more independent than we were decades ago, and just how they contribute to this increasing mental health epidemic.
So you would have seen a huge change over the 30 years then in what you've seen?
Definitely, yeah. There have been, again, sort of noted shifts in, again, how people sort of do their social life. People aren't really engaged in their communities like they once were. They're not really engaged in community organisations as they once were. And subsequently, again, there's kind of this noted increase in people feeling lonely, people feeling sort of directionless. And as a result, there's kind of a really clear connection over that time span with those shifts with poorer mental health outcomes, and particularly in the case of young people.
I really like the fact that your friends came to you for some advice and to open up to you. I think it's, for me, whenever I feel like I'm having a shit day, when I empty my cup, I'll tell you what, I feel so much better. Do you know what I mean? And it's really hard for men. What's your interpretation of toxic masculinity?
It's a big term. I think specific to what you just shared in relation to that, be it stigma or that reluctance that men have kind of upheld in the past to disclose how they're feeling, to be real about how they're feeling, is something that's been incredibly harmful and continues to be. I think there's been improvement in the last 5-10 years in terms of encouraging men to speak up and encouraging men to, as you just shared, disclose with those close to them what they're going through. But I still think there's a way to go. I still think there's particular cultures, particular environments where that's still really stigmatized and not done very well at all. So again, there's still a lot of work to be done in that space.
What needs to change?
I think just an acceptance that this kind of portrayal of masculinity, that men should be strong, men should be invincible, men should be completely immune to feelings of sadness, of feeling down, of feeling pressured. This myth that might have come through perhaps the stories we've read in the past, or the films we've watched, the sort of superhero films, whatever it is that's caused that, I think that needs to completely flip on its head. And we need to understand that human beings are human beings, and life is difficult. Life presents us with all sorts of different challenges. And if we're negligent and we ignore the impact those challenges have on our mental health, problems are going to follow.
Growing up, even as a kid or as a boy or a teenager, did you ever feel like pressure to be a certain way or act a certain way to fulfill what society tells you you need to feel?
For sure. Yeah, I think growing up, my first love, perhaps much like yourself, was football, Australian rules football. And in that environment and my, I think, time span playing football was a really interesting one. When I think about my sort of mid-teenage years when I started taking football a little bit more seriously, I feel like it was a really different time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I'm talking sort of 15 or so years ago, but a lot has changed in that time. And certainly when I was a teenager, I felt like, again, if you wanted to make it in that environment as an elite sports person, you had to do so by being that invincible person. You know, you couldn't have struggles outside of what was going on the football field. You kind of just had to be that sort of bravado type personality if you were to make it in football. And certainly it took me until my early 20s, I think, to realize that I needed a bit of help. My life wasn't completely in control. I'd been through some things as a young person that had adversely affected my mental health, and I needed to work through that. I actually remember talking with one of my first senior coaches who I won't name, and I don't say this to be disrespectful or to discredit this particular coach. He'd been a very successful AFL footballer, but I remember sharing that I was going to miss a training session because I was just struggling with my mental health. And again, this is about 15 years ago now, maybe slightly longer. And his response, well, get on top of it and make sure you're here on Thursday, which was the session after that particular one that I missed. Now, I don't think that conversation would elicit the same response today. But at the same time, I remember sort of feeling like, okay, well, I need to get on top of this pretty quickly because I need to get back to training and be in a good enough place to train properly.
You mentioned playing footy as a kid. I play with the boys in the Northern League. Mm. And I have to say, when I played the boys, everyone's always like, oh, so you must have been treated so differently. And I was like, hell no. Mm. The boys treated me like just like another person, like another footballer. Mm. I don't think it's not until you become a teenager or your early adulthood that these expectations of life starts being put on you. Mm. When you talk about the AFL, right, I'll tell you something that I learnt when I played at Collingwood. Nathan Buckley, good dude. Like I'm cool with him. He's epic. They offered me to go into the coach's box, went in there, and it was Bucks coaching, and it was like one of the scariest moments, right? Because they're like, you cannot even chew. Don't make a sound. Don't move. It distracts all the coaches. And I was like, sweet, we won't move. That day I learnt some bloody swear words, right? Oh, I'd never heard certain swear words. But after the game, I couldn't help but think, how do these guys get through this, right? You muck up a kick, you play footy. You never do it on purpose. Yeah. It's an accident. You don't go out to stuff up a goal. Mm. They don't do it on purpose. Why are they being abused? Mm. That's what I think, right? Why are they being sworn out? And I went up to the ops manager. I'm like, mate, this can't be good for their mental health. I legitimately did this.
That's awesome.
For the senior coaches. I go, can't be good. What are you doing? Have they got someone to turn to? And he goes, let me teach you something. You know when Nathan Buckley or a coach is screaming in the phone and he's smashing it and he's screaming, you know, you can tell what they're saying. It's like a therapist on the bench is taking that message, and that therapist is translating it depend on the personality, right? So if the personality is they don't like to be sworn at, he'll go tell him he did a good job, it was okay, but better next time. Mm. If it's someone that likes that aggression, he'll deliver it that way. Mm. And I think that's where football's gone to. So that coach that used to coach you, he got told to harden up and get it done because that's your job. You're a man. Mm. So I think times are changing. And I think corporations like that, even the biggest club in the land, is able to see that and make those changes.
Mm. Yeah. I love that you spoke up and
as a footballer, if I missed a goal, the last thing I'd want to be told is that was a shit kick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know it was a shit kick. I missed the goal. I don't need you to tell me. Like, it's not essential. Mm. Like, tell me to go make up for it. Just tell me I can go get it back, and I will. But if you send a message out and say that was shit, I'm not going to try. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I have more, but don't go anywhere right after this. I'm Mo, and you're listening to Entrepreneur Her. We're talking toxic masculinity on a sporting field, in a workplace. It's everywhere, basically. Dr. Ashley Humphrey, who has a PhD, works at Monash University and Federation University, Melbourne. Dr. Humphrey, I want to ask you a question. Are you single?
No, I'm not.
I was going to say, because if you had a Tinder profile, PhD would look bloody good in there. I wasn't asking for me. I am gold star lesbian. Can we talk about your mentoring? I really want to touch on that because I think it's really important.
Sure. Yeah, do a little bit of work with a couple of athletes, elite athletes, and help them, I guess, just with managing the pressures and the kind of abnormal environment they live within as elite athletes. In the past, I've also done some work with at-risk young people, which I've really enjoyed as well. I think it's so important for young men, young women, to have people that they can talk real-life stuff to. And there's been obviously an increase in the amount of young people that are seeking professional help, and that's really, really important and significant. But I also think that it's so important for young people just to have people, again, that they can talk with and journey with and navigate life with. So it's a role that I absolutely love, and I'd love to do more of it, to be honest.
How did you become you? Hear me out. Because every time I find a unicorn guy like you, right, somebody who's woke, who's okay to express his feelings. You've got mates who trust you with their feelings. You care about this. You're mentoring people. You generally want good things for men. And I'm not saying all men don't. I think a lot of men block it out and just want to move on with the oomph. Like, were you raised really well? Did you have good mentors yourself? How did you have this outlook on life?
Very kind of you to say first, Sima. I think my mum's quite possibly listening, so I better say that I was raised pretty well. I think my upbringing was a little bit unusual. My father left when I was very young, and subsequently I probably faced a lot of challenges myself from a very young age, and certainly endured some pretty difficult times as a teenager, also as a young adult, and suffered myself from depression and anxiety. And I think through those experiences, it's difficult to not then subsequently be really empathetic towards other people that are going through the same thing. And I remember probably at my worst in terms of when my mental health was really, really bad, just thinking, I don't want any of my friends to experience what I'm experiencing right now. So that kind of led me to want to do something about that and want to actively not only help my friends but help other young people that were going through the same thing. So the work I've done with schools, for instance, has largely been with young male students who have a sort of difficult family dynamic, maybe an absentee father. And I see so much in them of myself when I was a young person, you know, these challenges that young people face as a result of having a difficult home life are generally pretty consistent. Obviously there's differences case to case, but generally there's some like really consistent themes around self-worth, around identity that they struggle with.
So then So take me back to where you felt like, okay, I need to see someone. I'm struggling here. Depression. I need to see someone. Well, how was that for you, that moment to be like, I've identified that and I'm going to do it? Because a lot of people find it really hard to come to that, and they fight or fly. They'll run from it, right? Sure. Where, you know, with mental health, and I'm sure you've done the work, I'm doing the work, going through it is probably one of the best things you can possibly do. And I know that sounds crazy, but unless you go through it, you won't understand. So what was that point for you?
I was about 20 years old, and it was actually through football. We at the football club I was playing with at the time in the VFL, we had a chaplain, and I got into a little bit of trouble. I did something a bit silly after a preseason camp, and our coach at the time said, I want you to spend some time with this chaplain. As you know, when the coach tells you to do something, you tend to listen, particularly after you've done something wrong. And he was really influential in my life. His name was Bruce, and he was someone that I just felt like I could be really honest with and just talk with. And he was probably the catalyst for me then going and understanding that, well, actually, yeah, maybe my experiences as a young person weren't actually that normal. Maybe I actually have some things here that I need to deal with. And that led me down the path of seeking further help and just wanting to, I guess, come to a place where I wasn't experiencing a lot of the mental health challenges that I was experiencing at the time, but also just wanting to kind of be the best version of myself, I suppose. And to get to that point, there was a bit of work to be done.
So then would you say that you would suggest football clubs to have someone on hand for people to see? I think especially like all footy clubs, like they make a shit ton of money locally, right? They have a lot of money coming in. Yeah. My brother plays in the shittest division ever, and he got paid more than what I did when I played AFLW, right? So if he's getting paid that kind of money, you can afford somebody to come in once a week and just be there for the guys and the girls to have access to.
Absolutely. I mean, as far as I know, Bruce was a volunteer. He just had a heart for helping people. And I think sport is such a powerful place to play that role of helping people. For me, at that time, football was a big part of my world. And to have someone within that world ready to go, wanting to help not just myself but the team at large, I think was huge for me, because quite possibly, despite needing help at that time, I don't know how active I would have been in getting it. But again, to have someone right there and there, and for me, again, that world that I was in was football, but it'd be no different for someone that maybe worked in a particular corporation or was in the arts or whatever. If there's someone present in that environment that gets that environment, I just reckon that's so significant.
I think it's really important. It's clearly changed your life. Because like you said, if you weren't given that option, you probably wouldn't have seeked it out. You would have just got on with it, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of things that happen in life, so much that happens in life, you don't know what it's like until you go through it. So then you go through it and you go, okay, I've been through it. I know what it takes. And like, I'll share a story when much younger, I'd say maybe 10 years ago, a mate of mine, male, took his own life, right? And I was broken. I was just like, but hear me out when I say this whole story. I literally thought to myself, that was really selfish of him. He's left me behind. He's left everyone behind. He's broken us. This is hard, right? And then in the last 4 years, I've had my own mental health challenges, and I've had two times, I've had suicidal thoughts because my mind has gotten so bad that I didn't think there was a way back. And in that moment, after I was able to recover myself, I thought to myself, the first thing that came to mind was, I get why he did it. I understand it now because I've been there. I've been to a point where I don't feel like there's a way back. But then also, I'm so grateful I went through all that because I was able to work through it. And if you can get through it, it's so much easier to live life. Otherwise, the anxiety cripples you. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's so well said, that you can kind of live in a place where there's issues below the surface. And not to get too sort of theoretical here, but Freud, any first-year psychology student that's had to read some of the works of Freud, talks about this sort of subconscious level of thought that we're not really present to, but it's there. And one of the blessings of, I guess, what you've just described, when those experiences actually get to a level where you're like, I can't deal with this anymore, I need help. By working through those sort of subconscious thoughts, those subconscious issues, whatever they might be, it's so significant in that it can actually start to get rid of them, start to bring about some healing. So it's almost like if you think about a physical injury, sometimes it's good for a physical injury to get to the point where maybe you need to get surgery, maybe you need to get or go on a rehabilitation program to actually get whatever's wrong with your body completely right again.
I used to watch videos and stuff, and I used to hear people say, go through it. And I never understood it. I was like, what are you talking about? How can you go through this? Well, I don't get it. Because I used to be the fight or fly, I used to run, right? And so going through it never resonated with me until I understood what it was to go through it. And it was to take that piece of anxiety, work out where that trigger comes from, and work through that. Because for me, a lot of my anxiety is triggered by my childhood. So if I can figure out what that trigger point was and be kind to myself, like I am so much kinder to myself than I've ever been, and reminding myself that I'm okay and that's just something that's happened in the past, that's going through it. And I'll tell you what, once you're able to work out a trigger and you're able to work through a moment, you generally feel like there's 10 bricks lifted off your shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you feel that with your process through?
Definitely. And even working with young people, I feel that that's been something that's just been so significant in what they've shared about their experiences of again, not just neglecting or kind of pushing away these uncomfortable feelings, but actually taking them head on, which it's not easy to do, but as you've just described, it's so significant. And realistically, it's kind of the only way to get over whatever it is that you're dealing with.
Did you just get back from a trip from doing work overseas?
I did, yeah.
What'd you do?
I was in Ukraine for a brief period of time, interviewing young people about how they've endured the past 2 years since the war and Russia's invasion of Ukraine commenced, and some really fascinating insight into different coping mechanisms. We're talking about sort of dealing with trauma and dealing with mental health issues. certainly a lot of young people have been, as you'd understand, incredibly affected by what's happened there over the last 2 years. And some, whilst really harrowing stories, some really inspiring stories about how young people have sort of coped and navigated that time as well.
I can't imagine what they're going through, or can't imagine what it would have been like for you to be over there.
It was certainly pretty full on. Spent most of my time in Kyiv, the capital, where things were relatively stable, but there certainly were some potential threats whilst I was there. Much safer in central Ukraine and Kyiv than the east of Ukraine, where a lot of the fighting's happening, but still, again, you're on pretty high alert. But I was only there for a very short period of time, a couple of weeks. People have lived like that for 2 years. And again, understanding their stories and trying to offer a little bit of support as much as is possible in such a brief amount of time was an experience that, as strange as it sounds, I really enjoyed. Some amazing people again and some really resilient people that just have, like you shared, taken things head on and doing everything they can to help their country and those they live around.
Mate, I appreciate everything you're doing to support boys and men. Keep doing what you're doing. It seems like you're making a big difference and we need more people like you. If you or someone you know needs support, they can call Lifeline on 13 11 40. It's available 24/7. Don't go anywhere. We have more right after this.